are live Love on Talk Radio. Radio. Genesis Radio on Blog Talk Radio, and watch out, we are flying by the seat of our pants. We don't know what we're doing, and have had a major computer crash just about a half an hour ago. So, as a result of all that, we have Glenn Jabalina here to save the day. So, he's got lots to say, and then in the background, we're going to have Raquel Akier, and she's got lots to say. So that means I'm not going to be under all the pressure that I thought we were going to be. But we are going to be talking about family court, politics, possibly some religion, everything your mom told us not to talk about. We're going to be talking about it because the family court, especially, is crazy. They're off the hook. They're off the map. They're off the edge of the flat earth. So we're having lots of trouble here in Florida, and we hear that other places have lots of trouble also. Child support, spending time, access to the court, one end to the other, it's a train wreck. And it is hurting and damaging our kids. So the music in the background, I think it's called Heavy or something like that, but it's kind of a catharsis of our own frustration with stuff like this. So hello, Glenn, are you there? Hello, Glenn. Hello, are you there?
Yes, I am here, and I'm delighted to be on the show.
Welcome, welcome. Okay. I pushed the red button so I can hear you. So I am assuming that other people can hear you and me. So what's on your mind tonight? What would you like to start with?
Well, let's start with the $50 billion question. So here's the question. What industry generates more than $50 billion a year?
Now, what we need is a Jeopardy song to chime in right now.
Yeah.
But I think I already know the answer.
I'll give you a hint. It collects more funds than all the other court systems combined. You're right. And door number three, that is the correct answer. Are corrupt. They
I think we got Raquel
money.
On the line here.
Is that Mrs. R?
That's me.
Raquel.
It's been so long since I've heard your voice, girl.
Good to hear you too, Glenn. How the heck are you?
We're still fighting the fight, man, and doing what we can do. So I was just running through some numbers that I pulled off of the movie Divorce Corp. And they did a good job with that movie and a lot of facts that still pertain today and will continue to pertain as long as the system in place is still fueled by high conflict attorneys and corrupt judges and just the menagerie of the bad characters that destroy families on a routine basis. So
don't they ever? And I've seen Divorce Corp also, and I agree with you. It's a great representation of what is happening in the States, and then it compares the United States with other countries and how they do it and how they deal with divorce. And it's really quite a contrast It's a stark difference. And meanwhile, I came in, I called in, Glenn, just as you were saying that family courts, more money flows through family courts than any other courts, any of the other courts combined. And this is something that Divorce Corp, the movie, does. You know, it shows you that. It shows you how it's done and how they do it. And it must. It just simply must stop. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I know you're in the trenches. I'm in the trenches too. Gary's in the trenches. You know, we're trying to figure out every which way we can notify the public, notify our elected officials, and get something changed because it's such a big waste of time. It's such a big waste of money. And in the meantime, it just literally destroys families. And finally, I have to believe that if the people knew what I know, what you know, Glenn, what you know, Gary, that they would want to, they would be moved to do something about it. So we just have to, convince them that it's actually happening. That's my plan, my goal in life sometimes.
Yeah, well, I agree, Raquel. And some of the people I talk to, you know, that I just touch on some of these issues, some of them are horrified, you know, and they walk away shaking their head, and they don't even know a tenth of it, you know. And so what is happening, you know, in the big picture, you know, from a moon's eye view, it's destroying our kids. It's destroying our future. You know, with the high rate of divorce now, you know, and so many kids involved, you know, it can't help but leave a major mark on them. And, you know, whether or not they grow up to be adults to ever figure out it all out, what all happened, you know, remains to be seen. But some of them clearly don't figure it out, and they don't even know where to start. They don't even know what the questions are, let alone what the answers are. And for that matter, a lot of us don't either. You know, it takes us 20 or 30 years to figure it out.
But, yeah, that's a good point.
The fact of the matter is that there's no comparison from the existing courts. And I'll take an example of the criminal courts. It's astonishing that criminals have more rights in a court of law than parents trying to get equal rights for their kids. You know, in the criminal arena, you're entitled to court reporters, and if it's a newsworthy story, they have camera crews in there. You have a jury trial. You have none of that in family court. It's an abomination of the court system, and I don't know how to give them a wake up call other than what we've been doing for the last 15 years. It's just so corrupt.
Well, I'd like to share something, you know, that I've learned not too long ago. Actually, this was in the last several weeks. You know, to rewind back further, most of us going back 5, 10, 15, or 20 years, you know, have been involved in the family court to one depth or another. But there's also a lot of us that have tried to get out of the state courts because they're so corrupt and move into the federal court. Well, it so happens I have been in the federal court for, you know, now about a year, you know, for a bankruptcy proceeding. And what has happened is the excessive amount of child support has driven my finances into a total train wreck. So as I have been backed into a corner, either to fight this and figure out what exactly has happened, or, you know, walk away from the whole thing and lose the farm, you know, so to speak. But where I'm going here is that in the research that I have been doing is that I have discovered some very interesting federal laws that the state, at least the state of Florida, appears to be having trouble with. And generally, you know, from a moon's eye view again, is that the federal laws are enacted and they down to the states, and they pretty much guide the states as to what is required at the state level in the family courts. So part of that, where I'm going with this, is that I have discovered some federal law that one of them, it comes to mind, is 45 CFR 303.8. And what it does is it gives very specific requirements for the states to meet support guidelines. And so as that continues, the other part that I have discovered is that there's other federal and state law to where they have to have a court-ordered specific parenting time before they can plug that number into the equation to figure out child support. So in just informal asking around to some people that I know, they are not, they have no court-ordered specific parenting time. And there's a number of them out there, including me and the long history of this case. So that begs the question, is that how are they taking a mathematical equation, you know, of maybe a sixth grade level, and taking and plugging zero into the equation where we have zero court-ordered specific parenting time, and then try and figure out what the proper amount of child support is after we add up the income from both parents? And the obvious answer to that is it can't be done. It can't be done mathematically, and it can't be done legally. And so we've got a problem. We're not getting our parenting time, and they are continuing to extort child support for excessive amounts. And meanwhile, when we're trying to get the child support fixed, we don't have anything to work with. We don't have a baseline. We don't have a court-ordered specific parenting time. So even though we're getting zero, we try and enforce a court order that's zero. I mean, Raquel, you've been in legal. What do you think about that?
I think it's a part of the problem is that, of course, the state workers and the prosecutors aren't doing their job. So if they were to simply, by federal law and state law, as you said, follow the law, which is to make the parenting time and not just make it, but enforce it. It has to be enforced. And that's something, Why Dads Matter has been trying to do in the Florida legislature, which is to put some bite on that enforcement. So even when the court orders parenting time, the other spouse who's being alienated, the other spouse who is the alienator, they just simply don't show up. They just simply don't abide by the court order, and nobody is being held accountable. So, as I remember, Glenn and Gary, we had gone to at least one legislature to discuss the idea that this parent, who's the alienator, needs to be held accountable, and we have the law in place to do that. We have the laws in place to do that because it's a violation of a court order. And let's just say the court doesn't include the parenting time, there must be some simple way for a parent to have recourse. So they go back to somebody who helps them. So they say, look, I'm involved in calculating, what is due and owing, and that's fine, but let's go ahead and figure out what I can afford, A, which is in the guidelines, and B, what's my parenting time? And if the state would just actually do their job, things wouldn't be perfect, but at least there would be some sort of recourse. But there is none. There is no way to turn when the court doesn't accept a violation of a court order, doesn't hold the person accountable. Parents go on not seeing their kids for years and years and years, and still being liable for the child support when there was never any parenting time. And that's something you've explained to me, Gary, through your papers and our discussions about it. So there is, in fact, a law, a federal law and a state law that says if, in order to calculate any type of child support, there must be parenting time included. And this is not happening. And even if it is when it is happening, it's not enforced by the judge. Glenn, what do you think?
Absolutely. I think that it's such a miragene of corrupt officials that, part of the problem is that there are court orders from LaBarga stating you started at 50-50 custody. Gary has seen the executive order. I have seen the executive order. I've hand-delivered it to each and every judge in the 12th Circuit, and they just put it through the shredder. I have sent it to high conflict of divorce attorneys, putting them on notice that you must inform your client you start at the 50-50 mark. You can modify it from there, but you cannot deviate much. That's the starting point. They don't do that. They never tell their client. Let me see what I can do. Hey, I got a hold of the other side. We'll start out with 4 days a month. You pay a grand a month in child support, and then we'll sit down and figure out a real parenting plan. Guess what, folks? That day never comes. And they're running all the way to the bank trying to tell you they're doing a better job to get you more time. Get you more time, you should start at 50-50. That attorney needs to be in jail. He's fraudulently telling his client untruth. He's lying to his client. That's fraud, and it's unacceptable. And until we get some federal agents or some judges that actually have the kahunas to set the attorney straight, we're not going to see much changes. The first thing that should spew out of a judge's mouth, where's the parenting plan? I want every day accounted for, every holiday, every child's birthday, every dad's day, every mom's day. It's 18 pages. It better be filled out before we even talk about $1. That never happens. The kids suffer.
Yes, they do. We've got a caller on the line. Let's hear what they have to say. I'm kind of new with this.
Hello.
Watch out. Hello.
Policy Institute, January. Democrat Gavin Newsom had 23%. Closest
Republican. Hello, caller.
7% today. Newsom, 28%. Scott was up to 14%.
Hello.
Question is that a beginning
of somebody doing a commercial?
Or is 14%?
I think it's the caller here. We're going to mute that. So, this is a very frustrating thing, though, the whole family court issue. You know, is that if any of us go on to Facebook or any search engine and just type in family court, father's rights, parental rights, there's enough material content, frustration there to last, several lifetimes. And yet, even Raquel, if we do go back to court and we do get a court order, says we get everything we're asking for, which never happens. We never get even close to that. But even if that did happen, there's no way to enforce it, because if we take that court order to the sheriff, all they do is say that's a family court matter. We can't enforce that. So what are we doing this for? Why are we spending all this money for? The only kind of recourse that I can see that I've seen so far that has it indeed is in federal court, in spite of what we're led to believe, is that the child support guidelines are a requirement. It's not a good idea. You know, it's not discretionary. By federal law, the states are required to abide by the support guidelines. So that leads us back around the mountain again to the parental time, the parenting time. So if we don't have a court order to start off with for a specific parenting time, then we're still at ground zero. We're still at the starting gate. We haven't got anywhere. So if the federal law is a requirement for the states to abide by that, what is happening, what I have seen in some court precedent is that in a few rare instances, when the court, the state child support enforcement people were taken to federal court, they lost big time. And they lost on the grounds of the civil rights violation. And I believe that case came out of Missouri. And even in the 11th Circuit, the appellate court, there is also some case law that says that the child support guidelines are a requirement. The states are required to comply with them. And so the other part of that picture, though, is it is beyond difficult to get anything remotely similar to a family court issue in federal court. They just don't allow it. They don't do it. So that's the difficult part of it. But yeah, I believe if more people knew about this federal requirement hanging over the heads of the child support enforcement people, I think things would begin to change. Because the first thing that needs to happen if we follow this whole clam bake through is the first thing that needs to happen is that the family courts need to decide on a specific parenting plan. That means how many days for parent A, how many days for parent B. And that has to come down to a number of percentages of parenting time. But that what we're led to believe in state court is that parenting time and child support are completely different. They're not related in the slightest, and therefore we can't do anything about it. You know, even if you know we don't see the child for 5 years. There is even some state law that says if the custodial parent especially is withholding or concealing the whereabouts of the child, that is considered as a change of circumstance, and the non-custodial parent has gone back to court and has made some changes based on that. So, unfortunately, not many people know about that, and that part of it's not being enforced. Comments?
Well, the problem still lies with enforcement of it, and I think one of the avenues that has not been addressed as much as it should, whether or not we get blown off or not, but I think the state attorney, once there is a violation of our rights, our constitutional rights, it comes out of the civil arena and into the criminal arena. And I have not met one state attorney that's willing to cross that line. And those state's attorneys should be held accountable as well. You get the line, well, it's a civil matter. We've got a full load on our criminal. You know, we don't do that. We don't cross the line. At the end of the day, a violation of a constitutional right is a violation of a constitutional right. That's what we have to pound in their heads, because they just don't. They think violation of your constitutional right in a civil matter, in a civil courtroom, is way different than violation of your constitutional right in the criminal arena. I would certainly like to see what textbook he was reading.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thrust behind the 11th Circuit case, I'm thinking, where the 11th Circuit appellate court decided that the requirement for guidelines child support comes actually under Title 4D, and that when that is violated and the state goes outside of the guidelines, that relief they're saying is available under 42 U.S.C. 1983. So that, to me, fits right into what you're saying, Glenn, is that, yeah, there is a violation of the U.S. Constitution and therefore a violation of civil rights, and the violation not only to the parent but the child as well. And there's property violations there as well. But so much of this is going under the radar, and it's not being enforced. Raquel,
I wanted to say that I think the way they could say sure to get away with sort of limiting your rights from one court to another is because by nature, the civil arena is not of a criminal nature. It's supposed to be not of a criminal nature, except that when you're talking about dependency trials in dependency courts under the realm of civil cases, and, you know, while the criminal courts, you know, intertwine because these are cases of charges of neglect or abuse, which are already crimes. But they sort of get to water it down. They get to kind of water it down in civil court. And even though there might not be enough evidence to charge a parent for a crime, abuse of a child in a criminal arena, they do it, you know, night and day in the civil arena and get away with it. I mean, it's like it's done on purpose. And then it's also that shroud because it has to do with kids and family, kids, they don't want, you know, it's in secrecy. They're not really allowed to do that. You know, I mean, if you really, you know, got down and dirty into the Constitution, they're not allowed to do a lot of things they do. But just, you know, for our purposes, there is case law to say that. I know one specific case where the Fourth Amendment wasn't sort of allowed wasn't protected under the civil arena because the case law said it was because in a civil case it's not of a criminal nature, even if somebody's able to prove of a criminal nature. I know it sounds kind of like back and forth, but it's this whole, it's a trial of not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's a preponderance of the evidence. It's almost as if it runs on accusations without evidence when it comes to civil court. And all of these things are unconstitutional just on its face. Because it doesn't say in the Constitution that you can hide under the realm of a civil court arena and still do the same thing, which is take away your rights.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a cover. It's a cover. But when you do go to the federal statutes or the U.S. Supreme Court or district court rulings when it comes to families, there really is a lot of case law in the favor of families and dads and grandparents that, you know, it's a liberty interest. And, you know, any type of removal, when you're trying to file like a civil rights case against, for instance, a county social services department for snatching your kids, they make that hurdle really, you know, really hard to jump, you know, because if it was so easy, so many parents would be doing it and lawyers would be taking their cases, except that when you get to the district courts, it really is hard. It really is difficult to get into that federal realm. Although I like it. I like the federal realm better because the state courts are just too caught up in the system and the money and the trafficking and the, and high conflict, the divorce, you know, giving people jobs. You know, these lawyers work on these cases for 10 years. The kids are adults at this point, and they're still battling out in court for no fucking reason. Why are you battling something out after you've been separated, you know, for 15 years? And they still got you dragged down in court. Actually, my advice to the public would be, you know, if you have to get a divorce, you want to get a divorce, it's your business, it's your choice. But there's ways to do it amicably that you don't have to, you know, turn to the court to make decisions for you. You can sit down in a room and act like an adult and be reasonable, and understand that your child needs both parents. It doesn't really matter what your opinion is of your ex. Okay, at this point, it really doesn't matter. What matters is the child, and the child is the most important thing. And the best thing that you can do as a parent is let your child decide for themselves. Not that they even have to make a choice, because that child always chooses to love both parents. There's nothing wrong with the child having more people loving them. I always think about it that way. If somebody is being a good mentor, a good friend, a good uncle, a good cousin, you know, a good grandmother to my children, I applaud it, because that's good for them. It doesn't take anything from me, Mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I just wish people would understand. You go into the system, you know what's going to happen? You're going to lose everything. All of your money is going to go into paying for lawyers, the courts. Your whole life changes. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're rolling on to the half-hour point. Let's take a two-minute break or so here, and we'll come back in two minutes. Hello. We are back live. Hello, Glenn. Hello, Raquel.
All right. We're back on the air. I just want to throw this out that, you know, when people, and Raquel is exactly right, if you can avoid the courts and do it between two adults as adults and do it for the children, we are all better off. Unfortunately, that's not the case in many cases. So I think we have to attack the problem. And again, it goes back to the brainwashing from the high conflict attorneys to typically the mom, but it could be the dad, that everything revolves around child support, revolves around parenting time. And the more parenting time you give up, the less money you're going to get. If we can turn that situation around and tell the judge, and I'll just say my case, you know, was set at a set amount for 4 days a month, I would have paid back, if I saw my child, 50% of the time. So it took the fear out of the mom not able to make her ends meet. It would have deflated the attorney's bank account because he wouldn't have to be going to court all the time, and everybody would be happy. So I think if you have the means to do it, takes a lot off of the conflict. If you say, look, let's take money off the table. Money's no object at this point, as long as it's reasonable, and let's concentrate on this 50-50. Let's start with the child first in our shared responsibility, and then we'll see what you need to make ends meet. I think that type of collaborative agreement within the court system would work a hell of a lot better than what we have now.
So the lawyers determined that they figured out that if the mom has the child more often, say the majority of the time, then she gets more child support in the calculation.
Correct.
Yeah, that's just not cool. That's just not right. You know. I mean, they've got to see through this, though, right? I mean, okay, so, and, you know, it's cheaper. I mean, I'm sorry, it makes no sense to me. It really makes me angry when I think about it because I really don't understand. I was a young mother divorced at the age of 25. Well, separated at least at the age of 25. And I was adult enough and smart enough to sit down and have an adult conversation, amicable conversation with my ex and iron things out one-to-one, you know, with one lawyer. I never went to court. I got a divorce, separation agreement, everything with one lawyer, and pretty inexpensive, by the way, not one court appearance. And what that resulted in, that my children, our two sons, had mom and dad. I didn't even like calling myself a single mother because I wasn't. I was really proud to know that my boys had a father because and I needed them. So they had I was working full time. If they had baseball practice, a basketball game, a rehearsal, you know, something going on, I always knew that I can rely on my ex to go get them when I couldn't, you know, or every other weekend or certain holidays. And I would, you know, it would be like a break for me. I would get a break. And it was good for them. I mean, they have two whole big families. They don't just have me. They have my family. They have dad. They have dad's family. You know, they're adults now. My one of my sons lives with dad. He lives with my ex. He's 25. And the boys have relied on both of us, and they need both of us. I couldn't have done it. I couldn't even, and I didn't like him. Okay. You know, it's not like I really liked the guy at that point. You know, maybe for me personally, it would have been easier to just walk away, but I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that to my sons. Why would I walk away from my dad? That's their dad. But, you know, Glenn, I've freaking seen other women. I've seen women do it, too. I've seen it happen. And like you said, most of the time it's the females. And, you know, and it's a real struggle. It's a real struggle trying to be a parent alone.
Well, what's, you know.
Yeah, it is. And what you're saying there, Raquel, kind of ties in to some of the research that I recall. Lynn, I think you forwarded to me about the statistics about the fatherless and what happens in a bigger scope, you know, as far as the percentage of both boys and girls, what happens to them, you know, as they grow up without, especially the father, but, you know, it could be a father or a mother. Do you recall that research, Glenn?
Yes, I did, and... That was put, I believe, by the Family Civil Liberties Union, brought out some of that information. But yeah, and it'd be interesting now with the with these mass shootings to somebody do a deep dive into these disturbed children that have been killing people. And I guarantee you that the percentage of fatherless or motherless homes or single parent homes
is a large percentage, if not all, of all the shooters so far. That's my prediction, and I don't think I'll be too far off base on that. I mean, it just goes on and on. Early pregnancy, suicides are higher.
They're less likely. The numbers are really in favor of a two-parent household, mom and dad, biological mom and dad, nuclear family. Kids are more likely to go to college. They're more likely to save sex for marriage. They make more money on average. They're less likely to go to jail. All of the benefits are pointed towards the nuclear family. Now, there's absolutely nothing wrong with putting the nuclear family on a pedestal. Are we all going to are we all going to meet that great, cornerstone of society? No, we're not. We're going to reach for the stars, and some of us are going to fall to the treetops, and that's okay. But that doesn't mean we forget about what is in the best interest of society and families, and that is holding the nuclear family on a pedestal, because the numbers are all in our favor. The data is all in our favor. Kids do better all across the board, crossing all different demographics. They do times and times and times better than children who don't have a mom and a dad. Both.
Yeah, that's very true. The more we research all this,
it doesn't mean that you have to be perfect. It doesn't mean like, oh, well, I'm not at that point. I'm not in a nuclear family. I only have me and whatever your circumstances are. You still make the best of it. But that doesn't mean we have to shoot down the pedestal. We still shoot for the stars. Shoot for the stars. The nuclear family is the best thing for children.
Yep. I brought up those statistics, and it is from the FCLU. Five times more likely to commit suicide, 32 more times more likely to run away, 20 times more likely to have behavioral disorders, 14 more times to commit, 9 times more to be a dropout, 10 more times for abuse of chemical substances, and it goes on and on and on. And we have presented these facts in evidentiary hearings and to the judges, and they take these facts like it's hearsay and made up. They don't even take it into consideration of the best interest of the child. That's how corrupt the system is.
Yeah, it leaves the parents wondering, and the scope of it gets wider and it goes deeper. The more I get into this, to the point to where now, some people like Dr. Mario down in Miami, some of the research and that he's pulled up and forwarded to me, I've sent some of it out in an article, but it's amazing. We're talking about suicide here. The connection that Dr. Mario made between the family court. Well, I should start with a veteran. The veteran who's newly discharged has done several tours. Maybe in Iraq or something like that. He gets out of the service. He gets home, and he is in no mental psychological condition. Just to float back into suburbia in the United States. He's got problems. He can't sleep, having nightmares. He has financial problems. The marriage starts to get stressed or breaks. He ends up in family court, ends up not being able to see his kids for months or maybe years at a time. Can't get work. A lot of them are ending up homeless. But the thrust of the research that Dr. Mario forwarded me is that there's a direct connection between the veteran, PTSD, to family court, and to veteran suicide in that order. And if we look at that, that process, that debacle, in the context of
of the family court is that the family court is not is a huge problem. It's becoming more of a problem that we cannot ignore. You know, especially when we consider the high rate of veteran suicide. We have to ask ourselves how much of that veteran suicide is directly related to these veterans that have been ground up and spit out by the family court.
I assume it would be a substantial number. And as far as I'm concerned, everybody that had that decision in that divorce, using their undermined tactics, they should be charged with accessory to murder. That's how strong I feel about that, because they are a direct result of that veteran committing suicide when he has no hope left to see his kids.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And Glenn, you and I, we went to the CRC meeting up in St. Pete here in Florida, you know, just about a month ago, and we talked to somebody there, you know, that came up to us, you know, after we had given our 2 minutes of fame there, you know, for the panel. And
13 hours later.
Yeah, after waiting for 13 hours to testify for 2 minutes, you know, so that's the price you pay, you know, when you want to be heard sometimes. But, you know, it broke my heart to hear this lady say that, you know, I think it was her nephew had, was early 20s, got out of the service, and had got caught in the family court thing and ended up hanging himself. And he was like 22 years old or something. 22 years old hanging himself. You know, that just, you know, we gotta do something about it.
And, you know, that's the ones you hear about. You know, what about the ones that are covered up? I mean, I'm sure the numbers that we hear about suicide, at least when I was growing up, if there was a suicide in town, it was natural causes or, you know, it was never really, that was kind of taboo back in the day. So I'm sure those statistics are low, maybe not as great as they were 30 or 40 years ago, but I'm sure we're still not getting accurate numbers on suicides.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And the next, and you know, mental breakdown, and you know, the brink of suicide. You know, what are those numbers? I'm sure they're up there as well. So yeah, the suicide is permanent closure, but what about the level right below that? That you think about suicide every day, you just don't have the guts to do it, or you don't have the weapon to do it. And the level before that, where you're just a basket case, you can't work, you can't make a living, you're in fear 24/7, you know, and the level below that, you know, where you can't hold a job, you're irritable all the time. It goes on and on and on. Those numbers are astronomical. Below the suicide level, and I think that needs to be exposed as well.
Well, yeah, and
right. And you have so many. You have so many dads, particularly that I'm aware of, that go through this system, and I mean they're chewed up and thrown out, and what once may have a good career and a good salary, a good home, a car. Everything, all the above, yet they get into a family court case and fighting for their kids, and through that fight, because it brings you to all those mental breakdowns that you were saying, Glenn. First, you're in shock, then you're scared, then you can't concentrate, and then you lose your job, then you have to sell everything to pay for your lawyers, or child support, then you're left to like zero in the ground, and you're thinking about. I mean, suicide you've been thinking about since day one. You know, it's the mental breakdowns that I've seen. I mean, it's not, of course, it's not just the veterans. It's all of us. And somebody. It has to be because the state courts and the politicians who know about it, who know about the scheme and the scam and the money and how it creates all these jobs and it kind of helps the economy, at least in the state of Florida. They're already involved. They won't touch it. They'll lose their jobs. They don't want to go out on the edge. They don't want to. There's not enough whistleblowers out there, although we need them and we should support them if they want to come and speak. But at this point, because it's so strong, it's so powerful, I do think that it has to come from a federal nature. It has to come from a federal law enforcement agency that can come into really any county in the state of Florida and conduct an investigation into child protection services and also into the family court judicial circuit, by judicial circuit. What the heck is going on in here? Why is everybody complaining? Why are people committing suicide? Why are they containing all these kids in foster care? What the heck is going on? Can we have someone come in from the federal government, a competent law enforcement agency, come into any single county or every single county in the state of Florida, and they will figure out, and they will be able to figure out the same things that we all have figured out, that it's a scam for money. And who's losing? Kids. So it's real nice, you know, that that students want to protest. I don't know how you protest against a right or your civil rights. So, you know, but, you know, I'm certainly against, I'm not against it. I mean, students can do whatever they want. But if they really want some questions answered, to help families, and a lot of them know somebody's involved. Somebody knows somebody involved with Florida's DCF if they live in the state of Florida and have kids. They even warn you against them. Why don't they demand answers from Congress? You all need to come into the state of Florida and figure out what the heck they're doing in the courts, because they're not following the laws, and nobody's holding them accountable. And we've got our hands in the air because we can't do anything, because nobody will listen to us.
Yeah, Raquel, and, you know, that kind of leads me back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago regarding the federal side of this. You know, we've been given the Kool-Aid to drink here, believing that, you know, the federal and the state regarding family law are as far apart as the East and West and never will the two meet. But the reality, the fact is once we roll up our sleeves and start doing homework here, is that all this stuff like you're talking about, Raquel, with the family court, it all comes down from Title IV-D money. Title IV-D is synonymous for federal. And the boatload of laws that I keep discovering more and more regarding the child support guidelines, Social Security requirements, you know, and those in the garnishment, which we haven't even talked about. But all of that comes from federal, and that's what the state laws are modeled after. And so we need to be able to realize, to understand that we do have relief available, and especially for our listeners, in my humble opinion, is that I believe that we should be able to go to the Department of Justice for this, is that the DOJ has got to have some influence here to be able to investigate wrongdoings and this kind of corruption at the state level. This is not trivial. You know, it's not an inconvenience. Our children are being destroyed, and the best people that our society has to offer are being destroyed. Either their lives are being destroyed, or their family, or their property, or all of it. And it's a train wreck of biblical proportions that we need to do something about. You know, and even talking about the Bible, you know, it starts to get my blood pressure up, you know, to the churches out there. Shame on you, churches. You know, you churches out there. I'm going to say you churches, yes, you churches, need to roll up your sleeves and realize that the families in your congregations are being destroyed. You need to speak up, get involved, and advocate. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right, so we've got about 4 minutes left. Let's collaborate on the next show, and how about an effort pinpoint effort of what we should try to accomplish in the next 30 days. Any thoughts?
Yes, I actually do have. I have a plan in operation right now, Glenn. I have joined the Reform Party of Florida, which is a party that was sort of close to non-existing because there was no organization involved in the past couple of years. So myself and a colleague of mine, Joe Wendt, we kind of came in and we were appointed as the executive committee for the party as of right now. So we're having our state convention this Saturday in Tampa, and we're going to be putting together a committee, and we're going to let that committee decide on our platform and what we intend to do in Tallahassee with respect to the laws that we want reformed. And a big portion of that is going to be about family law, because we recognize that that's a major problem in the state of Florida. And so far, I think it's a good plan. I mean, it's a way to be in Tallahassee, have a platform, a political party backing, and we could really voice our opinions and be speaking from some, you know, small little microphone, you know, however small it is. But I think it's worthwhile, and that's something that I've been put together for a few months now, and it's all going to come to fruition on Saturday at our convention.
And where is that at?
It's at the Law Library in Tampa.
Okay, and I see that you have a Facebook page, so if people are interested, they can go to the Reform Party of Florida on Facebook, correct?
Yes. Thank you so much, Glenn. Yes.
Okay.
Awesome.
And the invite is there for Saturday's convention. Thank you.
So when is that coming up again, Raquel? What's the day on that date?
That's this Saturday, April 14th. And that's the 2018... This Saturday, this Saturday at 9 a.m. It's going to start at 9 a.m. And we're going to have our 2018 Reform Party Florida convention. So it's an annual convention, and we're going to be electing officials and creating a brand new platform and doing all the good things good political parties do.
Wow,
what I hope to do. Yeah. So Randy Townsend is, you know, you guys know, Glenn, you know, and you know Randy Townsend. He's going to, he's volunteered or stepped up to be, he's going to be our secretary. Or he's going to run for secretary Saturday, so that's going to be fun. I'll also be posting it on my Facebook page, Raquel Okai, to get all the information, or Reform Party of Florida.
Okay, very cool.
Thank you. What are you doing this month, Glenn? Oh, okay.
We'll have to plug that.
Okay, we're at the end.
Sure,
okay, gotcha.
Half the stage shows up there, for sure. Thanks for coming, Glenn, you know, for showing up. Hopefully, you know, we get the word out here. And appreciate all of you guys and what you have to say and making our voices, you know. Is that you know, we just put our pants on one leg at a time, you know, we're just ready to be trying to be heard and leave the world a better place. Do something to help. But we can't give up and can't quit.
Play that harp.
Yeah. Just one song that I get reminded of, you know, from our high school days, Jeff Rotol. skating away. That's it. We're off. We're off the air.
All right. So if we want to download that, we can go through the archives, Gareth.
Yeah, I believe it takes them an hour or something like that to get ready. But
for sure, I think it went very well, man. It was good getting back together, man. Putting a band back together, you know.
Yeah.
Putting the band back together.
Yeah, it's a truth. Oh, man.
Yeah, so I think now that I've got some more time on my hands, that I'm gonna be rearing my ugly head again for a little bit, only because I can, you know. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, just like Raquel up there, you know, I didn't know that was coming up this Saturday, you know. So that's good, you know. We can start. Plugging that, you know, getting the word out for that, and drum up some support on that. You know, keep doing these shows, keep doing the media stuff. I'm a big believer in the First Amendment and the media. You know, I still believe.
You want a carpool it up there? I'd consider going up there.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I mean, it starts at 9 and be on the road by 8, but we'd probably be home by 1 o'clock.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I've been up there enough to I know exactly where the Tampa Bay or the Tampa Law Library is. You know, it's only about a couple blocks from the federal courthouse.
Oh, really?
It's the one I'm thinking. Yeah, the one I'm thinking.
And they're open,
yeah,
and they're open on Saturdays?
No, well, there's probably part of them that's open, but Raquel was doing her thing up there, you know, as a political party. So they've probably got arrangements for meeting rooms or something like that.
All right, well, that's good. All right, Gary, this was a good show, man. I mean, I felt comfortable with it, and it's funny. I'm looking back at myself. I look like I'm a Manatee County Sheriff. I've got my 27-inch laptop in my passenger seat, and you know, every time you pass a cop, they got the computer screen going, you know. I got my little mouse on my armrest here, you know, and I got my keyboard in my lap, and you know, the drywall in my apartment there, and the AC's not working, and it's dusty. So I've been sitting in my nice air conditioned electric car, not burning any gas for the last hour and a half. I'm plugged into the grid, and I may sleep here tonight. I don't know.
Oh, man, how cool is that?
That's very cool. I'll have to send you a picture of my of the setup here, man, because it's pretty cool. All right, so think about
that is awesome.
Saturday, and then I guess Drew called you today. He had to go to just want to know if he had a media card. I think he ended up going to Best Buy to pick one up.
Oh, who's that?
Drew, my tenant. I told him to give you a call today.
His computer
went down. Yeah, not a big deal.
Oh, okay.
Not a big deal. I think he did that. So I'm looking forward to getting my office up and running here, and the green screen up, and getting back to rocking and rolling. So I'm just putting you on notice, Gary, that probably in the next few days, I'll need my dual monitors back with my machine screaming.
Well, my mission is to get this internet connection working, you know, so we may have to get you an external video card, or rather a network card, you know, to get around that. It looks like that one... That network card is built into your machine just ain't going to cooperate. So there's ways around it.
Yeah, we bypass it and put an external one. It ain't no big deal.
Yeah, one other thing, too. You know, let's plan on getting you a good battery backup. You know, even if this, whether or not this problem was lightning, we don't know for sure. But the one problem here, though, that is kind of telltale more than so it was previously is this network interface connection. You know, I mean, that's the sign of, you know, a lightning hit coming in through the wire, you know, and taking out your network card. You see what I mean?
Yeah. So what, I should get at least a 1,000 V8 or 600? What size?
Well, usually, you know, the way it works, you know, if we get a 500, you know, we plug a half dozen things into it, and then it overloads it, you know, and causes other problems. So, I would just suggest start out with 1,000, you know, and that way, you know, if you've got other stuff around there that you want to plug into it, you know, you'll have enough capacity. So your computer shouldn't take much more than about 400 or 500 kVA, you know. So
what else would I be plugging into it?
Well, you possibly your router, you know, that would be one thing. Printer, even a monitor, you know, because the lightning will take out a printer big time.
Well, like I say, I got the whole house thing. The only thing that I would really use this for is if we had a complete outage and I wanted to keep up and running or save my data. I don't know.
Well, the battery backup really, for the most part, is not about backing up a power outage. What it is, it's to cushion a big electrical spike that comes in through the power grid. So, it's kind of like, having a big capacity there, a big tank of water. You know, if you have a big tank of water and you get hit with a hammer on the side of the tank, you know, it causes a little ripple. But if you have a little hammer without any tank there and you smack it on the side of the computer or whatever device you're going into, at that point, it's a lot more likely to do some damage. And so the battery is like a big tank of water, you know, big tank, to be able to absorb the spice and so forth. And, you know, the reality of it is it's not the big outages that take out the hardware. You know, it's the spikes and the ones that might go out for 3-5 seconds or something like that and then come back in and really nail your equipment. And so that's what you want to protect from. Because when the power goes out,
right,
you're probably not going to be using it much anyway, you know?
Okay.
But, you know, I just don't want to see, you know, having a big, long outage like this again.
All right, well, let me go back into my my little dungeon here and see if I can drag all the stuff over here and get back online. So, good show, Gary. Glad we did it. And we're going to do this every Monday, every other Monday. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, as far as I know, Raquel has scheduled me for every Monday at 8 p.m., you know, so.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. And she,
yeah, awesome.
She does something on Wednesday afternoons, right?
She does Friday and Saturday night, and I think she's got several other shows that she has set up other people with that do shows kind of like me. So, you know,
Yeah, Crosshairs with Raquel, 1 p.m. on Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
This is where she, yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, because I know she's doing the Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, okay. All right, Gary, let me get out of here. I appreciate it, and I'll catch you tomorrow sometime.
Okay, we'll talk then.
Great show. Thank you, Gary. Bye.
Thank you.